You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
On October 29, 1956, up to 49 Palestinian farmers were killed in an Israeli raid on the town of Kfar Qasim. One day earlier, Tel Aviv, in an alliance with Britain and France, declared war on Egypt and invaded the Sinai Peninsula. The Israeli border police entered Kfar Qasim to enforce a curfew on all Palestinian towns and villages near the green line separating Israel from the West Bank. The Palestinians were unaware of the curfew, which had been announced only 30 minutes before the arrival of the Israeli forces. Many were returning home from work when they encountered the Israeli forces shooting at everyone they saw. Within 2 hours, scores of civilians were executed, including up to 23 children. Shalom Ofer, an Israeli officer, later testified, I quote, "We acted like Nazi Germans. We did not think," end of quote. Many of the injured were unable to get help from their families for 24 hours due to the curfew. The bodies were buried in mass graves in nearby villages. The Israeli government initially censored reports of the massacre, but details eventually leaked. Those involved in the killing were tried, convicted, and given prison sentences. But Israeli President Yitzhak Ben-Zvi pardoned many of them and reduced the sentences of others. Within 2 to 3 years, all of them were freed. In the 70s, a group of Syrian actors produced a film in memory of Kfar Qasim. The last scene shows Mahmoud Darwish, the Palestinian poet, writing a poem for Kfar Qasim.
Mahmoud Darwish. اقرا لاشوف كفر قاسم انني عدت من الموت لاحيا لاغني
to live, فدعيني to sing. استعر صوتي so من جرح توحد
واعينيني على
الحقد الذي يزرع في قلبي عفج انني
مندوب جرح
I represent a wound that is not for sale. I represent a wound that is not for sale. The strike of the executioner taught me how to keep walking on my wound and to keep on walking and walking and resist. Mahmoud Darwish.
على جرحي وأمشي ثم أمشي
to understand the impact of the Kfar Qasim massacre, we need to put it in its context, in its reality. The reality here is the one that is affecting the Palestinians of 48 and those who now are considered the citizens of Israel, even though that they are fifth-class citizens. Now here we're talking about in the 50s when the Palestinians of Israel, they were under military law. They were under the military governor. Unlike the Jewish citizens of Israel, the Palestinians, the Arabs, whether they are Christians or Druze or Muslims, they were under the military law of the state. And they were compartmentalized in their own places with heavy restrictions on freedom of movement, with curfews where you need to get a permit from the military governor if you want to go from area A to area B. And also they were denied their right of self-determination. They were denied from being united with their other Palestinian members of society, whether in West Bank or Gaza. They were denied from receiving or sending mail services, post, simply because Israel declared the neighboring Arab countries, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and Egypt as hostile countries, and therefore there were no mail services. So they were completely isolated from the rest of the Palestinian society and from the rest of the Arab world. So while Israel claimed since day one that it is a democracy, but they did not know what to do with 130,000 Palestinians whom they could not uproot the way they did to more than 900,000 Palestinians who were driven out of their homes, their villages, their towns, their cities, their farms, their shops in the events of what we call the Nakba. So Kfar Qasim massacre came 8 years after the inception of Israel on 78% of historical Palestine, and 8 years after denying this Arab minority of Israel their basic rights, even though that on papers they were citizens of Israel, but on reality they were under the military governor. At the same time, because there was a regional war, because Israel joined the Britain-France hostilities on Egypt, they thought that this is the right time to inflict terror on some Palestinians of the heavily concentrated areas where there are more Arabs than they wanted to maintain, especially near the Jalil areas. And the idea was to terrorize the Palestinians, especially in the Jalil areas, to flee in big numbers to the West Bank, which was under Jordanian controlled in the 50s. This way they can de-Arabize the area. So the context of Kfar Qasim is the complex that Israel found itself having to deal with the non-Jewish members of its society. And another pathway that Israel has been taking since the inception is slow and silent laws after laws that targeted the Palestinians and the Palestinians only, especially when it comes to land development for farming, for residential, for commercial, for even residential renovations, land acquisition, rental. And here, this is a very careful and slow and long and complex process of targeting the Arab minority of Israel to A, confine them in where they are, and B, to confiscate their lands in favor of the state, to basically de-Arabize the Arab land of Palestine. And the beginning of what later became the mobilization of the Palestinian civil society began in 1975, in May 1975, when a group of politicians and intellectuals met in Haifa, lawyers, imams, doctors, engineers, met in Haifa and called for an initiative. That initiative became the Committee for Land Defense, because they knew that if they did not resist peacefully, Israel would continue in stripping the Arabs with more lands on a slow but steady pace. And therefore, the birth of the Lajnat al-Difa' an al-Aradi, the Committee of Land Defense, was in July, and particularly 29th of July 1975, that led also to Congress, to General Assembly of Unionists and farmers and more representations among the Arabs and the Palestinians in 48 areas, and in fact the biggest of which was in October 1975, where 5,000 of them convened to respond to the land confiscation policies of the State of Israel against them. You would say that this civil society movement would have attracted some sort of negotiations or discussions from the Israeli forces, but instead Israel responded with confiscating 3,000 dunams of the land of Kfar Qasim. And here we come back to Kfar Qasim again, that village that 20 years after the massacre, here we're talking 20 years after the massacre, Israel came back and stole 3,000 dunams from the families of the victims that they killed 20 years ago. And that escalation was also meant to break the spirit of the Palestinian civil society in the 48 areas, but it did not. It grew, and Israel kept also targeting them by putting a ban on the farmers of Sakhnin and the farmers of Deir Hanna to go to their own farms in the neighboring villages, under the pretext of that these areas are under military, are declared military zone. And on February the 15th, 1976, 5,000 Palestinians met in a big General Assembly to call peacefully, to put peaceful pressure on the Israeli government, non-violent pressure on the Israeli government, to call the Israeli government to remove the ban, to remove the restriction of movement against Palestinian farmers of Sakhnin. But how do you think Israel responded to this non-violent peaceful protests on February the 29th, 1976? Former Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin declared the confiscation of 20,000 dunams from Sakhnin and Deir Hanna and many Arab areas in the Jalil area, under the pretext of, believe it or not, development of Al-Jalil, Tatweer Al-Jalil. So Yitzhak Rabin, who, mind you, won the Nobel Peace Prize, stole Arab land, more Arab land, more Palestinian land, for the development of the area.
Hi, this is Rafif Ziada, and you're listening to 3CR, pro-Palestinian, happily proud radio.
So that confiscation was met with even more firm resistance by the Palestinians. The mayor of Al-Nasira, Tawfiq Ziyad, Palestinian communist, who was born in 1929. He grew up in a house of resistance. In 1936, when he was 7 years old, the British soldiers came to his father's house in search of weapons, which was part of the British policy to crush the Palestinian resistance, to crush the Palestinian armed struggle, and even the Palestinian movement. And here we're talking about 1936, the year of the Grand Revolution, when the Palestinian movement, the Palestinian society, waged a strike for 6 months, one of the longest strikes in modern history. That strike that paralyzed the British Mandate of Palestine. So he saw the British forces wrecking the house, beating everybody, looking for something. They couldn't find anything. Nevertheless, they took his father, they arrested him and kept him captive in a place in Al-Nasira. Now that person grew up, and when he was 19, he witnessed the occupation of his own city, Al-Nasira, as part of the occupation of 78% of Palestine in the Nakba. And he grew up as one of the invisible Arabs in the state of Israel. And he started writing poetry, protest poetry that protested against the marginalization, against the racism of the state, against denial of self-determination, and also poetry in support and in solidarity with his fellow Palestinians who remained, and his fellow Palestinians who were driven out of Palestine, that he hadn't seen and that he's isolated from. His poetry came in parallel with literature written by other young poets and novelists, poets like Mahmoud Darwish, Samih Al-Qasim, and novelists like Emil Habibi. And this was the literature of protest, the literature of resistance, Adab Al-Muqawama. While they simply wrote what they wrote, and they were reciting poetry, and they were arrested, nearly every poet, every novelist, was imprisoned at least once in his or her lifetime under the military rule of the Palestinians of Israel in the 50s and 60s. Tawfiq himself was imprisoned more than 10 times. Nevertheless, he kept the struggle. He believed in coexistence with the Jewish citizens of Israel that want to live in peace with the Palestinians. And he was one of the pioneers of Arab-Jewish coexistence and the formation of political parties that conveyed the voices of those who want to live in peace and refuse racism and refuse violence. Tawfiq wrote a poem in 1967 after the occupation of the remaining of Palestine. كأننا عشرون مستحيل في اللد والرملة والجليل هنا على صدوركم باقون كجدار في الحلق كصبار في عيونكم وفي حلقكم. As if we were 20 impossibilities as if we were 20 impossibilities in Lid, Ramle, and Galili. Here we remain on your chests, like a wall in your throat, like cactus in your eyes and in your throats. So Tawfiq Ziyad and the other leaders of the Palestinian movement inside the 48 areas, they met in early March 1976, less than a week after the declaration of confiscation, and made a call for the Arab society, for all the Palestinians who remained, to make the 30th of March a day of grand strike and protest, and to call it Yawm al-Ard, the Land Day, in protest of the confiscation of the Arab land. Israel tried to prevent this from happening by intimidation, by inflicting fear, by trying to bribe and persuade some of the members of the movement. They did everything, and they had less than 3 weeks before the 30th of March. So as we were approaching the deadline, the Land Day, even before the 30th, protests in Sakhnin, in other areas in Jalil, broke out. Demonstrations took to streets. Strike started since the dawn in the majority of the Arab areas of the 48 areas. And here came the success of the Land Day. The Arab society inside Israel responded to the call of the movement, to the call of Tawfiq Ziyad and many other mobilizers like him. And Israel responded with violence, attacking the peaceful protesters, labeling these protests as an act of hostility. They killed six martyrs. They killed six Palestinians, including one woman. They injured hundreds and arrested 300. But the strike went on, and the call was met. And since then, the 30th of March became an important day of the Palestinian memory, because on one hand, it embodied the steadfastness and resistance of the Palestinians of the 48 areas, and on the other hand, they made a call of oneness with the Palestinian nation wherever they are, and that call was embraced by the Palestinian leaders in diaspora, by Yasser Arafat, by PLO, and they made the day an international day of remembrance. And since then, the 30th of March became a day in the Palestinian calendar. And this is our story for this week. I will leave you until the end of this episode with a song written by Tawfiq Ziyad. A song I'm sure you had heard me and other Palestinians play many times. It's called Unadikum, I Call Upon You. And this poem he wrote in 1968, it became a song when the Lebanese singer Ahmed Qabour composed it and produced it in mid-70s. And by early 80s, nearly every Palestinian home had this cassette, including my home in Saudi Arabia. I was young, I was in grade 2 or 3, when I couldn't stop listening to the song, especially the flute intro of Unadikum. So I'll leave you with the flute intro and the beginning of the song. That's it for this week. I'll see you next Saturday. Until then, this is Yusuf Ahmed Rimawi, wishing you the best of time, and salam.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.